Hi, my name's Ilan Selinger, executive producer on the film On the End, which my older brother Ari Selinger was the writer and director for. I'm here with my brother Eitan.
I'm Eitan Selinger, I'm the composer for the film. Worked very closely on the set.
This film is a true story about a friend of our brother. Essentially, it's, you know, what we like to call a David and Goliath story. Mm-hmm. About, if you're familiar at all with the area in the Hamptons, out in Montauk, on some of the most prized real estate, there lives a lone mechanic named Tom Ferreira, who is a hoarder and also an auto mechanic. It just so happens that the land right on the water there is some of the most prized real estate in New York State. So essentially what happened, and this was back around 2008 or so, was that his neighbor was trying to sell her house, and she was convinced that his house was an eyesore because of all his car parts strewn over the land. So what she did was she was able to conspire with the town of East Hampton that controlled the area to basically kick him out. And so basically the story is about his fight to maintain his home amidst this crazy legal battle. Yeah, so our brother Ari knew this man, was a friend of him, basically worked with him to develop this story and then to ultimately create this film, which stars Tim Blake Nelson as Tom and Mireille Anos as his girlfriend, who throughout the film is battling cancer. You know, very much a love story between the two of them as this battle is going on.
And it's all true story.
Yeah, it's all a true story. I like to mention to people just that sometimes you see at the beginning of a film based on a true story, the facts are taken out of context, things like that. This is so close to exactly what happened. People don't even realize that lines in the movie were taken straight from the real characters themselves. So Tom Ferreira used to speak with our brother nightly for about a year.
Wow.
And he would just write down lines that he'd say, and they made it into the film. He used to call him up and say, "Hey Ari, you know, I read the script. You know, this isn't something I'd say. I'd say something like this, you know." And the facts, it very much follows the story, the legal case, yeah, and also kind of the medical struggle that's presented in the film. They both have diabetes. We've gotten a lot of comments that this film presents diabetes quite well. And actually, at the last film festival that I was at, you know, people were suggesting we get it out to organizations to show what it's like to, on a day-to-day battle, dealing with this illness.
Mm-hmm.
That's been something that's people seem to think is close to actual nature.
And how did you guys get looped in again?
How did we get involved?
Yeah.
So basically the genesis of this film is in, our brother was, I think he was around 19 or 20, and he was making one of his first short films when he was a student at NYU Tisch. And basically he had a short film that was about a mechanic. So
somebody else.
Someone else, yeah. Just, you know, it was a short film. Mm-hmm. Just about basically a guy whose car breaks down and needs to find a mechanic, and then the mechanic tends to be a little bit of a crazy guy. So that was the story. It was just a short, you know, 20-minute film.
Right.
And he was looking for sets out on the East End. So basically he was driving around in Montauk with his friend, location scouting. I was actually out with him, you know, one of those days, and he drives past this house on Navy Road in Montauk, and he sees what looks to be an auto mechanic shop. So he says to the guy outside named Tom, "Hey, is this an auto mechanic shop? We're looking to shoot. Do you know maybe another place where we could maybe shoot?" And Tom says to our brother Ari, "Well, you know, why don't you just shoot this movie in my backyard? And, you know, I'll help you build the set." That was the genesis of this relationship between them. So as our brother was making this short film, Tom kept kind of casually saying, "Hey, you know, you should make a movie about me someday. I've got a pretty interesting life." And our brother was like, "All right, shut up, you know, don't bother me." But then he started to hear from him, like, you know, what his life was like. And during the process of them knowing each other, there was this article that came out. It was a front page article in the New York Times. I believe the title was "Messy Yard: Pitts Montauk Mechanic Against Town on the Rise." And basically our brother started to really see a film in this story, and he learned more about it, and he spoke to his girlfriend who was dealing with this illness, and he realized that this was not only an interesting kind of legal drama, but also an interesting slice of life story between these, you know, this older couple. So that was how that came into being.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And so how did you fit in?
Ari's our older brother, and he's always liked to include us in all of his projects. So we would play with music with him. He would convince me to learn drums so my parents could get a drum set so he could end up playing it, you know. He was maybe, I don't know if this was his plan, but he was maybe secretly trying to get me into music so I could score his films. This is possible. But I ended up going to, for a couple of years, to Berkeley and Boston to study film scoring. Worked out perfectly for this film. I was on set the whole time. Ari really likes to include us in his process.
That's really cool. So a family affair.
Completely. Yeah, so, I mean, me and my brother Lon would go scouting with him. We always felt like we were a part of things with him. So, yeah, I would work pretty closely with Ari since Ari is... music is a huge part of our lives. One of the movie that introduced me to music was The Last Waltz by Martin Scorsese, and the band is the main act featured. It centers around them, and basically because music is such a big part of our lives and we all really love the same stuff, mm-hmm. It was really easy to communicate about what we wanted for the score.
And the music, that goes back to your mom and dad? They were stimulus?
You know, they love music. Mm-hmm. My mom's she plays classical piano. Alon plays classical piano as well, quite a lot on the score. My dad's just a big lover of music. He plays harmonica, I guess you could say. I mean, he's got a nice voice. But it's really my brother took a little bit of influence from my parents and then just took it really far. He'd take trips to the South just to kind of experience what the band did. And so that's, you can feel that in the movie too. You can feel that there is this, there's this musical influence.
It's so interesting, is music as an underbed, as a counterpoint, it's so poignant, so powerful, but yet there's a seductive element where you're watching the movie and you don't think about it because you're just immersed.
Right. You know, there were even some scenes in the movie that were completely changed by the music. I really understood more than ever the importance of film scoring for actually one of the sex scenes where we tried to make it kind of sexy or jazzy.
Yeah.
And we thought it would maybe actually be kind of funny that way. But really, what it needed was something to ground it and make it feel wholesome and kind of a tiny bit... it's a really trashy scene, but it's beautiful. So I kind of took one of my songs that I wrote as a waltz and I played it instrumentally over this scene, and it has this kind of melancholic quality to it. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of people ask us kind of what the influence is for the score is, and speaking on behalf of, you know, my brother here, you know, our older brother was kind of looking for what was kind of an inspiration in terms of a feel for it, and we looked at the movie Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman, you know, which is kind of about, you know, kind of a tragic hero in a similar way. Mm. And I think that was kind of what the inspiration was for it in terms of feel. But beyond that, the feel of the score is very similar. So my brother Eitan was very inspired, I think, by this nylon guitar kind of sound, which became kind of the underpinning sound of the film. I have a couple pieces in the movie which are, you know, just kind of a classical thing to give it kind of a larger sound, so it doesn't feel, you know, there's kind of a, I would say we've got this kind of simplistic vibe that goes along with the nylon sound. And then there's a couple of pieces that are kind of orchestral to say, this is a simple story, but it's about, you know, something that's kind of universal and, you know, kind of larger than what the story is actually about. You know, it's something that represents almost every person's life and their struggle against the larger forces. But yeah, so Cool Hand Luke, I think, was a big inspiration for the score. Eitan, what else was kind of, you know, what did you find were other score inspirations?
I always tend to look to Carter Burwell because I think my brother is sort of similar to the Coen brothers' style of filmmaking, where he can balance drama and comedy very well. He's a very comedic writer, and actually, Tom is a hilarious person. You know, he talks about Andrew Dice Clay in the movie. He has no filter, and he's just a really interesting character. So I think Carter Burwell was a good guy to look to, even something as late as Banshees of Inisherin and Fargo and A Serious Man. I just love his kind of simplistic use of some instruments without it getting too orchestral. So I was interested in that.
I think I'm always impressed by the way my brother here approaches a scene. He basically, our older brother would send a scene and say, hey, this is kind of the edit of it, and give a rough idea of what he was looking for and kind of what emotions he wanted to convey. Like, say, like, you know, there's a scene where there's a raid of the house in the movie, and I know from just an outside perspective that was a very difficult scene to score because you wanted to kind of get into his head that he was feeling chaos. The scene itself is chaotic, but you wanted to kind of get at this grit of these car parts being moved forcibly from this guy's house. So I thought it was very interesting the way my brother here took that scene and he put this sort of chaotic drum sound there mixed with kind of this stringy sound that almost sounds like, you know, kind of car parts being thrown over the place and forcibly being taken from this guy's house. So it's interesting the kind of psychological element that can be conveyed by a score, especially for a movie like this, which is very much trying to show what's kind of inside of a person's head.
There's something seductive about the underbed of music. Is it done well? You don't consciously think about it. It just kind of weaves into the substance.
Yeah, in fact, this has been a big theme I know my older brother, when he was in high school, he made he had a psychology project and he was always interested in film. Yes. So he did basically the impact of music in film. And I remember he showed that in the movie Apocalypse Now, the last scene, the Doors song, This Is the End, plays, which is, you know, like this kind of meditative kind of sound, while they're firebombing Vietnam. And I remember my brother showed a little video. He said, compare this scene to this scene. And he showed the same scene of the firebombing with like heavy metal music playing. And it's a completely different effect. And obviously what was chosen was this more mellow sound, kind of a counterpoint, kind of the opposite of what you'd be expecting. So I think the movie has a little bit of that, where there are definitely some scenes where we watched, you know, kind of the scene with like maybe more of a harder sound.
Right, that's yeah. There's a book, I believe it's called Audio Vision, mm-hmm. where this concept of something called anempathetic sound or anempathetic music. A lot of movies use this sort of against the image or against the music technique, where if something harsh is happening, they'll play something really serene and peaceful, and it has this really interesting effect. Also with Apocalypse Now, that was a movie I looked to because I like combining sound effects with music. So something that would typically be a sound effect, like a car part, I like to use that musically As a kid, I would mess around with that, actually. I built, like, some wacky instruments, and I'd like to record different sounds and just turn it into something rhythmic or melodic. But in Apocalypse Now, what they do, actually, is for the helicopters, you might know this, they use an organ sound for the actual helicopters, and it has this really interesting effect.
That's really fascinating. A friend of mine did a movie about a pro football player that had traumatic, you know, head injury.
Oh, yeah.
And he's worked, the football guy's working out in the morning on a treadmill. And all of a sudden you listen carefully and he's woven in taiko drummers into the rhythm and the beat of the guy running. Subtle.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. We did consider having drums in the background a lot once there was tension.
Get it to go.
Yeah, so right now we're in the festival run. It's been getting a lot of great feedback. We've been approached by sales agents and distributors. Recently the film played in Rome, Georgia, which we were thinking of kind of as a minor festival, but actually the two directors of the film Napoleon Dynamite were there, the Hess couple, and they loved it. And they were like, you know, we want this to be out in the world. So, you know, we want to come on as producers and help you get it out. So they just arranged a screening in Los Angeles, you know, for potential buyers. So we've been being approached. But, you know, anyone who sees the film and is interested, you know, we're still looking for distribution. So
this is brand new. It's happening in real time.
Yeah, it's happening in real time. You know, I mean, just last week, you know, I was approached at the film festival in Sarasota by someone who said they wanted to help distribute the film. But yeah, the film is complete. The score is complete. Took, you know, it was a labor of love, many years in the making. Yeah, I think something that was beautiful was that Tom, who the film's based on, was able to see some of the movie before he passed away. It was shot two doors down from where he lives. And, you know, this was a person who had a very difficult life and was, you know, this underdog who never got, you know, the attention or recognition he deserved. And I think at the end of his life, he was able to see his kind of life literally come to life in front of him and see some of the film. So that was a very special thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think our brother was very proud of that. And also personally in his own life, you know, he had kind of a strained relationship with his daughter. And at the end of his life, he was able to call her up and say, hey, you know, there's this movie being made about me. Maybe I'm, yeah, not such a bad guy after all. You want to talk a little bit? So they were able to kind of repair their relationship. He actually saw the film at the Woodstock Film Festival and, you know, was very appreciative of the work that was done and her father's tale being told.
So if somebody listening, if they wanted to engage, do you have a trailer or how does somebody learn more?
There's a website. The name of the website is, I think it's the On the End movie. But if you just look up On the End, you know, you'll find the Wikipedia page, some of the social media there. We have a sales trailer, but I think the official trailer is not out just yet. We'll be coming out soon. Hopefully, we're looking to release the film theatrically sometime, you know, hopefully in the next 6 months.
Would Netflix be an option?
Yeah, almost definitely. You know, we're still devising a strategy for how it's going to play theatrically or whether it's direct to streaming services. But yeah, you know, we hope that everyone can see it in the near future. Yeah, there's a couple more film festivals, so just, you know, keep a lookout for On the End, starring Tim Blake Nelson and Mireille Anos. My name's Ilan Selinger. I was executive producer and co-composer on The End.
My name's Eitan Selinger, and I'm the composer.
Thank you guys so much. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting for San Luis Obispo, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.